Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, change of plans. We were talking about how Brian Cashman was going to join us tomorrow.
He got so excited that he wants to do it today.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to welcome him on right now. Yankees general manager, Brian Cashman. Brian, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Brian. I know you're all excited that we thought you were coming on tomorrow, that all of a sudden you came on today. And you just for, you know, total background and to be totally honest, I'm not a Yankee fan, okay?
I know. That's okay. I know you got different sports allegiances than me.
Yeah, I do. And I know you're from Maryland, and we both at least appreciate the University of Maryland, hopefully when they get that thing straightened out. But by the way, as we sit here and we sit in judgment of all the decisions that you've made over here the last couple of years, the one that was, and I never really talked to you about this, the one that was really interesting to me was to bring in a new manager that was a rookie, inexperienced, never had been in that job before. Give me your overall assessment of how you thought Aaron played itself out this year.
I thought it went well, to be honest. I mean, and you're right, I'd say to be able to make a move like that, it would have to come from someone that has been in the position like I have for 20-plus years, that would be very confident in knowing the operation inside out and knowing, you know, when to pivot and for good reasons to do so. We had a great manager in Girardi, but obviously not to rehash it, but, you know, timing's everything, and felt that at that time and place for us to continue moving forward, you know, change was something that was important for the culture, and so we moved forward. And that meant saying goodbye to somebody who was tremendous and one of the best. Right now, it's at the top of the managerial candidate list for anybody in Joe Girardi. But we imported someone we felt that would serve us well as we move forward, too, serving our culture and our process and our players. And so, it's never-changing game, and trying to keep up with it in a progressive way is, I think, the real challenge. And I think we've made the adjustments over time to the analytic world, and we're making adjustments over time to that culture that exists in that locker room, and we'll continue to make the necessary adjustments we believe when necessary, and not be afraid of making tough calls. But I thought Booney did a good job. I think I really did. He came in here. And I can honestly tell you, as a compliment for someone who'd never done anything before, just wow. He really aced that interview to win the day. And I think we all would understand that you can be fooled in interviews, and I've said this many a times. He made sure that interview stood the test of time with how he went about his business in season. So the process we set up for the interviews to select those guys was one that would guide us to the right candidate, and I'm happy to say that he honored his answers, because he lived up to them throughout that process. And he's tough, he's knowledgeable, he's relatable. I think his family background, with his dad being a longtime manager and the generations on generations of Boone family players in this game of Major League Baseball, has served him well. So he's a blend of new school and old school, anybody who's had a chance to relate with him gets a chance to know that you have someone who's a leader sitting on the opposite end of you that's tough enough, but also willing to listen at the same time and adapt and adjust when necessary. So, 100 wins out of the gate, typically there's nowhere to go but downhill other than winning a championship. So hopefully we can get a championship for him, because it's going to be hard to top a 100-win season for himself.
Of course, and Aaron Boone's going to be judged just like any other Yankee manager on decisions in the postseason, in the games that are going to be scrutinized most. And, of course, two decisions with starting pitchers, CeCe Sabathia, Severino, leaving these guys in too long. When those two particular instances were happening, did you agree with how Aaron Boone handled those?
I think in one case, he went too long for my concerns a little bit, but with reason. I think something that hasn't been really broached about too much is usually when someone's doing something like that, there's there's those domino reasons behind it. And so he's trying to obviously match up the starter with the back of the lineup. And if he can get through and steal some outs, I would say is the words he would use, and I would use parroting what he said because I've heard him talk through it with me as well as with the media. He'd be in a better position to get through the rest of the game with the dynamic bullpen that we had. But that bullpen wasn't firing on all cylinders. You know, there's always something going on, and so there was no guarantee. You know, we had some guys that were banged up during the postseason, and in even some cases getting, you know, we're running out of, like, did he do something? Let's get an MRI on a guy. So during that, during a series, that series specifically, we're checking in on guys to make sure they're healthy by, you know, post-game running them out to get an MRI and stuff like that. So thinking you have them for one inning, if not two, you know, when you have in the back of your mind someone or some of them are dealing with various issues, I think led also to his strategic decision-making, trying to stretch.
So which was the one that you didn't like out of the two?
I'm sorry?
Which was the one? You said one of them you thought he went too long. Which one was that?
You know, I felt that, you know, the Sebi game, you know, was a game, and the, you know, I think both of them, that CC and Sebi, both obviously went longer than we wanted to go, but with the rotation, with the bullpen issues that we were dealing with, trying to get seven innings out of those guys was not necessarily guaranteed. So, you know, I talked to Aaron about it. You know, we're not connected to the dugout. And
are you sure about that?
Yeah.
I know you guys have fun with it, but, yeah. You know, obviously, you know, first it's illegal. We're not allowed to have contact with our dugout during games.
We have fun at your expense, Brian. A lot of fun at your expense, but that's okay.
You guys have a fun show, so it's fun to listen to. But at the end of it all, you did say something just that was resonating just now, which is it's any manager here in New York, especially the New York Yankees, is going to get second-guessed. But then, you know, the only reason never to make a change under the, you know, from a Girardi to a Boone or whomever would have been putting whoever the new candidate would be in a position to be triply second-guessed because he came from a successful manager that had a playoff run to the Game 7 of the ALCS the previous year. So that puts a lot more on the plate of an Aaron Boone, you know, that has nothing to do with himself. It has everything to do with my decision-making to make changes. So that's a lot more for Boone to handle. But the second-guessing comes either way. You know, people forget, you know, what transpired. Well, obviously, when Joe was in our dugout, you know, you're right, it comes with the territory. And whether you're a manager, you know, unless you're Alex Cora right now, unless you're, you know, a manager got sent home in the postseason, you're getting constantly second-guessed, whether it's Dave Roberts or Bob Melvin or, you know, it doesn't matter who they are. If they get the manager of the year hardware, if you lose, the second-guessing is going to come part of it. And that's what every manager who takes that job or a head coach who takes a job in professional sports knows is coming with that territory because of the media scrutiny. And some questions are more fair than others, but the great thing about Boone also is that he's good with all of it. You know, he's not – it doesn't bother him to be, you know, questioned, and he's also strong enough to say, you know what, you know, there might be something there. Maybe I did go a little too long on this, or if I had a chance to do it again differently. And so, that, you know, I think people should, you know, at least laser focus on stuff like that too moving forward, because that's a different animal than I think you're used to seeing in any sporting chair. So I think that's another thing that's going to serve him well over time. And I've, you know, I've had Torrey for 10 years. I had Girardi for 10 years. And hopefully, I don't know if I'll be here for 10 years, but hopefully Boone can be here for 10 years doing some great things, because the Yankees have been very lucky to have great managing people in that dugout. So he got five. I think he finished fifth in the manager of the year voting.
And you finished sixth, which was crazy. It's amazing how that whole thing worked out. We're talking to Brian Cashman, Yankees general manager, on the Fan, Boomer and Geo, CBS Sports Network. And you're joining us not just to answer our dumb questions, but also to provide...
You guys are making me laugh.
No, that's a good thing. Yes. But to provide a spotlight on a cause that is close to you. And you got a couple of big days of advocacy for homeless youth on November 15th and 16th. What else would you like to shine a light on there?
Well, I mean, it's a big payday for Covenant House in New York City. It's a homeless shelter, as you talked about. We capture, you know, the kids that are in need, and the money is vitally important. Our goal is 1.1 million. We're already at a million. We have, you know, a number of executives that are going to sleep out on the street, And if anybody's paying attention to the weather forecast Thursday with the snow and stuff, it's not going to be a good day. So if anybody wants to support and sponsor any of us, we're going to be sleeping out at the Javits Center Thursday evening. The Yankees have stepped up, and they're obviously sponsoring my sleep out with amongst others, and it's a great cause. We give these kids obviously meals, shelter, get them back on their feet, teach them skills to get back in the ring with job interviews. If they don't have a high school education, get them a GED. So we put them back on the road to return to normalcy, because all of us, you know, take for granted that, you know, we were born into having, you know, terrific parents to provide a roof over your head, you know, meals three times a day, schooling, all the things you think are automatic that comes with being born. And unfortunately, there's a population of people that nothing's automatic, and Covenant House is there to help the homeless youth out there. So covenanthouse.org, if anybody wants to go to that website, look for the executive sleep out. It's a big, you know, money drive for funding, you know, these services for kids that have so much to give if they just get an opportunity to get their feet on the ground.
And people can also go to sleepoutamerica.org as well to learn more about the sleep out that you're doing. How prevalent is the homelessness for kids that you're trying to help?
It, unfortunately, you know, and you wouldn't think it's at all in this country, but it's way too much, and things have gotten worse. And so, you know, there's a lot of different services out there, you know, whether it's public or private, that are trying to help solve this problem. Covenant House has been there for a long time. So, you know, our shelter here in New York City is on 41st and 10th. And, you know, they've done an amazing amount of work over the course of time. I mean, one of our, you know, there's a book out there, From Homelessness to Harvard, you know, which is about one of our members that went through the Covenant House shelter program. And, you know, so there's a lot of people that if you get a chance to meet with them, you're blown away with the amount of intelligence, the amount of passion, the amount of desire, the gifts, whether they're artists in the musical side or obviously in creating side. They are no different than any of us, and maybe in many cases better. They just were thrown a curveball early in life that in many instances weren't of their own design, and they just need to get balanced back out and provided that opportunity that all of us take for granted. Just the simple things. Imagine trying to figure out how to get a job when you can't even take a shower and have clothes to put on and get a good meal three times a day. You know, so Covenant House is there to help nurture, protect, and push forward these young people, you know, to give them that stepping stone to go, you know, return back to the normalcy of life that we take for granted. And they're very special. We have a vigil in Times Square at 6 p.m. on Thursday night, and then obviously the sleep out at the Javits Center, and then the Sleep Out America is something on November 16th that if anybody wants to study up on and take a look at it, sleepoutamerica.org is another area of focus. But our satellite shelter in New York City is one of, I think, 19 shelters in North America. Covenant House is operating, and it'll be we're going to hope to raise $6.8 million Thursday evening throughout North America for all those shelters in need.
Well, we wish you the very best with that, Brian, and good luck. You know, you talked about culture of your locker room and the Yankee culture and all that other stuff, and you brought in Giancarlo Stanton last year, you brought in Aaron Boone last year, just to name a few guys, and now there's this whole discussion out there that you guys are investigating Manny Machado and whether or not he fits the Yankee culture, the way that you have got it set up, the way you think about it. How accurate is that, and how deep are your investigations into who he is as not only a player but as a person, and does he fit your team if, in fact, you can afford him?
We are obviously looking through all of those things. You know, Manny Machado is a terrific baseball player. You know, we had a chance to see him, you know, on the front line against us for the Orioles for way too long since he was drafted in the first round by them, and he's been, you know, banging away against us both offensively and securing outs defensively. He's a tremendous player. And yes, we got to assess, obviously, does he fit, you know, our world and at what cost? And we're going to go through that process with him as well as every available free agent and potential trade partner as well to see what, you know, is the best course of action. You know, I've got to get two starters in here.
Yep.
You know, preferably elite, which, you know, those lists are smaller, but you know the better quality, you know, number one, two, or three type starter. You know, that's what we need. So I need multiples of those. I need, you know, we lost two relievers right now in free agency, whether it's Robertson and Britton coming back or having to replace them. We need to tend to that bullpen. I got to figure out that middle infield situation with Didi's Tommy John injury, which obviously brings up the Machado name. So we're going to explore all opportunities, both trade and free agent, as well as try to assess the, you know, the price tags associated with acquisition, and as well as the character and culture fit. And
I do that.
Hopefully, make a good call.
Yeah, hopefully you do make a good call. Two questions. One is the update for Didi Gregorius and his surgery, and how's he doing? And the other is Gary Sanchez, the surprise surgery that happened just a few days ago. What is his progress? And what did you think overall of Gary Sanchez's season? And how can you improve or get improvement out of him coming into this coming year?
Tommy John surgery, so the time frame is going to be anywhere from June, July, or August, unfortunately. So we're going to miss at least a significant portion of the season, and so that's why it's that important for us to kind of determine who this placeholder is going to be. It could be swinging Glaber over, and I have to replace him at second, or leaving Glaber at second and finding a replacement at short. So that's a huge issue for us to determine what's going to happen. So we'll see him when we see him. And then in terms of Gary Sanchez, yes, he had a left shoulder surgery, and it was a surprise to us. I mean, we've had some maintenance on it over the last 2 years where when it gets a little sore, you run him through the MRI tube. Nothing at the time looked like it was anything that needed the surgery on it. You treat it conservatively with the cortisone injection. He's had, you know, a few of those since 2017, but in more recent workouts, he just resuscitated and started feeling the pain again. So we had him run through again another testing process, which we gave him a course of action. You could do a surgery to clean this thing up and get it behind you. It's not a major surgery, or we can just continue to treat it conservatively. And he didn't want to do any more of the cortisone. He just said, you know, let's just get it taken care of. So he should be ready by spring training. To answer your question about, you know, his season, I felt offensively by some of the, you know, that's the great thing about the analytics stuff. Some of the behind-the-scenes numbers kind of indicate that if that season played out multiple times over on the offensive side, his numbers would be much better. There was a lot of unluckiness in the results of, you know, because his hard-hit data kind of hadn't changed throughout the previous years to this past year, other than the batting average suffered greatly and the power numbers obviously were down. But if we repeated those seasons over again, you know, you'd see much better overall, you know, results. But on the defensive side, we're going to continue to work at it. I think he's a great game caller. He's our best game caller on the staff. He handles, you know, all the pitchers except for Romine. Except for Sonny Gray, who wanted to throw to Romine. All the starters wanted to throw to him. And he's got a challenge, I think, like most would, handling that high octane out of the pen. I mean, those last few winnings are 98 to 103, essentially, with the Dellins and the Chapmans, and those guys are no easy guys to catch. So, you know, I think it's more difficult because of his size. So we'll keep working on him, but we're also, I think, lucky to have him. I've had multiple teams call me trying to see if they could extract him from us because they recognize the behind-the-scenes numbers, too, that this kid is much better than the numbers showed this year, and there was a lot of unluckiness in it. So I think he's going to be a big reason why we have success, and I'd focus more on that from my chair than any reason why he has any part of our failure.
Another minute with Brian Cashman on Boomer and Geo on the Fan CBS Sports Network. How prohibitive will the luxury tax be for you in trying to accomplish what you want this offseason?
That's a good question. I mean, I've not been told that I can't exceed the tax. I've been told, you know, Hal, the only thing I've been told by Hal essentially is the preference would be to avoid that tax, but, you know, the mission was to reset, get back under because of the penalties that were getting so extreme for where we were existing and lining our opponents' pockets with extra cash to use against us and deploy for their benefit. So now that we're back in that arena where we're in a safe harbor, you know, it gives us the ability to walk up to that line, and then when we're getting close to it, you know, Hal Steinbrenner and his family, as they always have, will consider whether it's worth going over that line. They've never said they're not going to go over it again. They've never said don't go over it. They said when you walk up close to it, you know, then get back to me and we'll have a discussion about, you know, if there's any more to be going forward or not. And so it's more of a discussion point now than a mandatory stay away from and reset. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised in the future at some point, you know, that the Yankees will again return if warranted to surpassing that. But I think operationally you always like to put the best team on the field at the lowest cost possible. And if those opportunities exist, that's the best play, but you know that's not also reality in most cases. So we'll do that walk and see where it takes us.
You know, it's kind of interesting as we talk to Brian Cashman. Just another minute, I got one question for you. First base is an interesting spot for your team, whether it be Greg Bird or Luke Voit, or I don't know if you heard this, but Scott Boras said that Bryce Harper will play first base. When you hear that and it comes out of the Scott Boras's mouth, does that resonate with you, or does that just go in one ear and out the other?
Yeah, I mean I would say that we just essentially assess what, you know, the players are. The agents, you know, that are, you know, I receive books from agents selling their players, but those books are inconsequential, or there might be email blasts with PowerPoints attached about what makes their players sing and dance. But the only thing that's making the players sing and dance is our internal assessments from our pro scouts and our internal metrics. So they, I think, are more eyewash, maybe have impact on ownership groups that, you know, that get pulled aside from the operation, you know, in other locations or something like that. So whether he says he can play first base or not, it doesn't impact us one way or the other. It's what we think about
right.
The player and where that player we think fits best for us. So, you know, I don't pay attention to that.
I mean, Luke
I don't
Voit,
really read any of those books that they send me.
Yeah, I would hope you don't. I would just say Luke Voit was unbelievable for you guys. I mean, the numbers that he put up, are they sustainable for him, or was that just like a one-hit wonder?
You know, we think they are. I tell you what, I got to give credit to our analytics department. They've been on this guy for a while. You know, there's some things that have stood out from his peripherals over the course of time. So, you know, we started having him identified as a player. You know, a guy named Justin Sims that works in our department. You know, Mike Fishman, who's our assistant GM, Kevin Reese, you know, Theo Fetty. All these guys have been pushing his name for quite some time now within our system, you know, as a player who was blocked in the St. Louis system. You know, he had some numbers they were putting up that they felt could translate at the major league level. And we wound up luckily lining up with those guys. We forecasted that you know, Tyler Austin was going to be out of options and therefore going to have to come off the roster at one point. And if so, you know, we're going to need a right-handed first baseman with options to be waiting in the wings. And here comes Luke Voit as a guy the last 2 years have been identified by our guys. And so, you know, we tried to match up and we were able to do so. And I would say from a human standpoint, emotionally, did I expect him to come in here and do that? The answer would be no. You know, I just really was trying to upgrade and replace Tyler Austin and get more flexibility as the roster moved forward into 2019. But I'd say from the, you know, the algorithms and the, you know, assessments from their world, they said he would be capable of things like this, and it's not a surprise. So that's where, you know, until you get an opportunity to give somebody a chance, that sometimes maybe the scouting world doesn't look at the same way, until you run them out there and see what they do, you'll never know. And so we were forced because of Bird's circumstances to give him an opportunity, and he took advantage of it. So credit to him, and then credit to a lot of those names I just mentioned who had been pushing his name as a potential, you know, guy to plug and play and see where it takes us and, you know, take a chance on if the matchup was correct in a trade opportunity. And so it was pretty cool. His passion was awesome to watch. The way he went about the big game, it feels like a WWE wrestler playing first base. The way he just, you know, pounds that baseball, and then the joy he goes around the bases with, and you know, it's electric throughout that dugout too. I think the fans appreciate it. That's why they gravitated them to the performance, obviously, but I think also because of his passion. So it's pretty awesome, and I appreciate those guys pushing his name in my arena.
All right, let's see if Brian Cashman can answer a question in one word. I'm going to throw three questions. If you can't do it, you can't do it, because I want to be fair to you. But let's see if you can answer a question in one word. Should Miguel Andujar have been the AL Rookie of the Year?
Yes.
Okay, all right, that's one down.
That's an easy question.
That's an easy one.
Give him a hard one.
Well, I'm getting there.
All
this
right,
is
okay.
This is how you do these things.
Okay, I see. Okay.
All right, the next. Did the Red Sox blasting New York, New York at every turn after winning a championship and beating you guys bother you at all?
No.
Okay. How intimidating is Brody Van Wagenen's looks?
Very.
I was looking for one word.
By the way, I mean, honestly, is he going to be okay at this job? Or I know you don't like to talk about other teams, GMs, and all that other stuff, but this is really unique, and it's a unique hire by the Mets.
And, you know, I set a low bar. I'd say if I can do this, anybody can do this.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. All right.
So at the end of the day, you know, listen, he's got a great personality. He knows the game. He played college baseball at a high level at Stanford University, and he knows the side of the game through the agent's lens. And so he probably has got a lot more insight into certain aspects than I would, because, you know, he gets, you know, people, I'm not even sure if people know, but he also represented, his college roommate was A.J. Hinch. So, you know, he negotiated, I believe, A.J. Hinch's contract with the Houston Astros, and I'm sure he's got perspective through his college roommate about how, you know, a successful organization like the Astros are run, and how the feedback he gets from his clients over the course of time about how they feel towards management, managers, coaches, development processes that have been in play, you know, things that they can gravitate off campus, you know, whether it's Driveline and stuff like that, that are various programs for development purposes. And so I think he's probably in a unique position to provide insight on a lot of levels that, you know, people are afraid maybe to convey as I'm the general manager, but is there a prospect that come to me and tell me that he thinks we might be doing something wrong, or, you know, you know, I'm only going to get that through a lower level channel, because, you know, they're not going to say that to me. But I think Brody, obviously, you know, has been operating in a different world, which will serve him well, I think, to some degree. And then there's some things he hasn't experienced that, you know, he's going to have to adjust to now that he's in this chair. So, but he's more than capable. He's a smart guy, and again, I think as long as you can communicate well and you have and you hire people smarter than you around you, because that's what's allowed me to survive. And you listen. You're willing to listen and give people the platform and opportunity to share ideas that they think would be impactful. If you create that type of environment and culture, you're going to have a chance to be successful.
Brian, thanks for joining us this morning. We really do appreciate the time. And, of course, if you want more information on what he is doing with homeless youth in Covenant House, you can go to sleepoutamerica.org. Brian, thanks for the time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Yankees general manager Brian Cashman on Boomer, you know, and Geo.
The most interesting part of that whole thing is explaining how they acquired Luke Voit, or why they acquired him. You know, because of Tyler Austin's options situation and identifying somebody from afar and seeing whether or not they would fit in Yankee Stadium. And then imagine how they all must be sitting there watching this kid just absolutely explode on the scene and have the impact that he had.
Let's go to the break.
And how it just basically validates the way they did it.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.